Hello, welcome to Mythology Marksmanship. I'm Morgan King, and I'm with Brian Neese and Seth Howard, the match directors of the, what is it called? Is it the Gem
Which
State?
One?
Yeah, exactly. Which one? No, well, I don't know. The one we're going to talk
Snake
about.
Snake River Standoff.
See?
Snake River Standoff.
You guys didn't even know the name, so I don't even feel bad at all.
Well, there's a couple of them.
There's too many is the issue.
Okay. Well, so one of them matches. No, it is the Snake River Standoff, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's coming up the first weekend of March, like 3rd, something like that?
Yes, sir. Yep, 3rd, 4th, 5th.
3rd, 4th, and 5th? Yep.
Yes, sir.
Which, and if you guys have not been to one of their matches, in my opinion, they run one of the most well-balanced courses of fire a guy can shoot.
Well, thanks. That means a lot.
Well, I mean, I don't know that it's really even highly debated that that's the case. I mean, there is a lot of good match directors out there, and you'll go to a match and you'll be like, oh, that's a great course of fire. It was really well balanced, and there's some that can repeatedly do it. And I feel like you guys are one of those duos that can continually put on a match that's really well balanced, well thought out, and challenges you on multiple levels. But one of the other cool things is when you go to one of your matches, you also have a pretty good location.
Yeah, all of them. Every match that we've run has been in a cool space.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's on your parents' place, isn't it?
So there's multiple ranges that I run on, that I've been running. So backstory on this, I guess, would be that Brian and I have run matches separately for a while and came to a place where we were making super similar matches. We're really close to each other, but we would write courses of fire that either one of us, I was copying him, obviously, because it was way easier. But we got to a place where we were running these, and I was running 2-day matches on that ground. That land that we run like the Hunter Championship on last year was some family ground, and then like the NRL match before or a couple of years was down on some private ground. All of it's private ground that we keep finding, but it that stuff, like from my end, came from Precision Rifle Shooters of Idaho, PRSID. Those guys ran in Vail, and they ran an Eagle and these other places that were cool venues, super cool venues. And I didn't even realize when I first started shooting that not everybody gets to shoot in super cool space all the time, which is wild.
Which that might be a West Coast thing, right? Because
there's always a vertical component to our matches, to our ranges. So I was further west and always on around the Snake River. So I mean, my local matches I put on Snake River PRS, and those were in Jerome. And anybody who shot there can attest to it's a very unique venue. You're shooting over a 200-foot tall wall of rocks that bake in the sun all day, and it's just very unique.
How far away from the jump site are you? From the Evel Knievel jump site there?
It's probably 5 miles west.
Exactly. So if you guys have ever seen any documentaries or remember the Evel Knievel jump, like, that is the canyon. We're shooting on the wall of that canyon in a little tiny cutout at his range, which is really pretty dang cool. And he has targets down the cliff face.
Yeah, we actually rappelled down a couple hundred feet and drilled into the rocks. And turns out the second time we shot that stage, because it was 200-yard swing, all the same distance, but it was all vertical. And, the second time we shot that stage, we knocked a target off, and I said, well, maybe we won't do that one again. So there's a little work getting them up there for sure. Down there.
I'm assuming the vertical component you're talking about is it's not just flat like most places where all you have is, say, laser leveled ground And so you basically, when you put your gun on, say, a barricade or something, you only have to move side to side to find targets. Now you have to move side to side and up and down.
Correct. Yeah, I'm referring to target acquisition. So the extra component, we really love that. You're not only looking side to side and at a berm, you're looking. Oh, I think it was you were talking to Paul Higley about it in a previous podcast, to where you're finding a reference point, and then you go from this reference point, like a tree to a rock, and then 2 o'clock from that rock, that kind of stuff. That's what we really enjoy.
Yeah.
Landmarking is a skill set that is easily exploited in a lot of these matches that isn't really, it's another stressor that isn't applied in a lot of matches you see where they're not utilizing the terrain in order to hide, or not necessarily hide, but to make the shooter pay attention to those landmarks, right?
Yeah. Which, and I feel like the more I shoot a lot of matches and hear people complain about certain things, they start bringing up, oh, that, man, that was too hard to find or whatever. I, for some reason, the match that comes to mind for this one, and maybe it's because they've pulled a lot of people in from several different companies, is the Ruger Koenig match. But then though a lot of the people that come from, say, the East Coast, they get kind of shocked by the difficulty of what you're talking about, of just
Yeah.
not trying to hide the targets, but just placing the targets where you can get to with a four-wheeler or hike to
But
relatively
not just
easily.
that, yeah. Yeah, not
But
just that though, is that using it as a stressor for that stage application. So when you build a stage, you're going to select what stressors you're going to apply and which ones you're not, which ones are readily available. And there is a huge portion of the shooters who do not do well with target acquisition. The higher end of them all have figured out a game of how to landmark, right? How to get to that space.
all
But if they
maybe
don't have a
not.
giant arrow, well,
All
a good
out
portion.
here, because that is one thing we see a ton. This is what just one the only reason I say that is because a lot of people haven't recognized or don't really recognize, I don't think, from what I can tell, like they don't say that. And I actually used to didn't think it was a one of the main stressors, I guess, that you would call a stage, or the like when you're building a
Right.
stage, like you should do that, 'cause I didn't really even think about that. I thought of it kind of lumped in with something else. And then, but
Yeah.
now I'm like, man, I think that's one of the main ones, and you should be paying attention to that one way more than.
Well, what it is when you there's a difference between higher level shooting, which you really want to get into and you really get excited. As a shooter, you really want to try to burn it to the ground and have all of the super cool stuff in every stage so that you could see what kind of a trash fire your brain can accept. But you get to running matches and you see the level of shooters that are across the board, right? The guys that are just starting out to the top, and you don't want to crush them with all of the things on every stage. And so if you don't start splitting out things like target acquisition, you get to where you're running club level matches and nobody wants to come back because they hit three targets. Like they're that I the hit percentage of the outcome of your shooters matters dramatically in your stage design and how you make a match come together to be fun and cool and engaging, but at the same time, like, we don't come out here to miss targets. That's not fun.
Yeah. I mean, our job is to entertain shooters, and
Yeah.
not just the top, 10%, but all the shooters that come to the match. So, we can grow the sport and obviously sell more
Spots.
entries,
Not just
spots.
that, but
Yeah.
yeah, we don't have a match if we don't have the bottom 80%. There's
Right.
not a, there's not a, there's not the revenue in order to maintain the thing. You can run on feeling as long as you'd like, but it still won't produce anything. And then you're going to be all salty because, well, it died because what it, no, it's because you didn't take care of entertainment. Just like Brian said, is we are entertainers in that respect.
Yep. And that's been it's ta it's I don't yeah, 'cause I think there's a balance, but I feel like you guys do a really good job balancing that, because you have to do like the 'cause even the bottom guys, when it's too easy, will complain, but then when it's too hard, they'll complain. You know what I mean?
So
I don't know how
we
that
have to
makes
deal
any
with,
sense.
yes sir, no, it does. But we have to deal with trash wind and trash conditions often. And
Yep.
so trying to write a course of fire, I don't know, for me and Brian and I have talked about this a lot. So we went back, and dissected everything that we can think of constantly. And if we don't make a stage to where it's 60% cleanable, then it seems to be the number that does really well for an entry-level guy, so meaning that the first six shots or somewhere in a 10-shot array, you have six shots that are super easy. You just took your time, didn't worry about the other four. You would clean that stage, no big deal. Making it that way.
Yeah, 60% seems... cleanable. Every time I hear one of you two say that, I'm like immediately confused by that.
So,
I get it now, especially when you say it the next way. You're just saying that the average score on the stage is going to be a six.
You want the average score to be five.
Okay, the average score to be five, but
six of those shots
are pretty much gimmies.
Are straightforward, not necessarily gimmies, but super straightforward. If you've done half of your things right, you're going to hit those six shots.
Yep.
So speaking in terms of stressors, so six of those shots will have maybe one stressor. And the last four of those shots should have, two at least.
Or three. Yeah. In magnified, right? Yeah. Making that to where, so like if you say you're on really like big littles are phenomenal for that sort of thing. So you have two targets at one hanger. You shoot a giant one, but in the terms of 5 years ago was the average size, and now it's like a horse of a target sitting out there. So you shoot at that one, and then you have to shoot one that's probably overly small for most conditions, trying to negate that conditional interference. Because wind, the gusts, the shifts can blow you off of a 3/10 target like all day long, unless you have a sweet wind call right on the shot before.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We do a lot of post game analysis too. Like we'll look through the stages, look at the scores, and find out what we did right and what we did wrong. And we've been doing this for, I don't know what, 3 years. We've probably talked after every match that we've put on and gone through the analysis process. So it's taken some time and we've made a lot of mistakes too. I used to do a lot of things that were just absolutely, we call them gimmicky now. And I still do on occasion. You gotta give them something to talk about.
So
yeah, I think that's better though, right? Is that giving that space to where you can work against those things to make it where, as a high level shooter, you get into a space where you want them to be all the stress, and then we end up making them gimmicky or wretched. But if you don't add those things, if you don't have that spice, you end up with giant targets at one distance, and you're like, "Oh, this is nothing. This isn't fun."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess so. The reason I am excited about talking to you guys about this is because you guys do a really good job, but you guys both analyze stuff differently and complement each other in how you do it. But I think it's really good as a shooter to understand the mindset of how a stage should be designed in order to, and what things stress you, so then you know how to break it down and then how to attack a stage. So you talk about the main stressors. I know I have before, but what do you feel like, the two of you, what do you guys feel like the main stressors are that stress a shooter on a stage that you're talking about?
I think it depends on you.
Yeah.
So I think when you're looking at a stage, it depends on what all of your course of fire is going to look like. And then you can apply it specifically to each course of fire, but it depends on your environment first for what we're doing. First thing I'm going to do on those is check my wind and my rain and whatever trash fire is coming down the pipe that day to try to make as applicable size targets as I can for those conditions to try to meet wind brackets. Because exactly like you say, the stressors, those are the things, if you understand what the stress is for those stages, it's way easier to attack that stage and to understand how to apply your target or your bullets to those targets. But after you get through your environmentals and your target sizes, then it's what's the position look like? For club level match stuff, we'll start to shift it down. We're going to gear down a bit and try to go more into half of it or more of it with modified prone positions and follow up shots on each target so that you don't have an original wind call on, because you hope that everybody's got their data on, but they don't necessarily. So you want to give them a spot to be able to watch those targets get hit, to be able to see that thing. When you're putting those things out, like where we're building these matches, a lot of times, like we talk, you have to landmark super hard. So if you're going to apply that to a stage two, you got to be careful about the position movement, the flow of that match. And then once you get them written, you write them all out to check to make sure that you don't have the same stressors on every stage, because it's not fun to do the same exact thing over and over and over again.
So if you want a list, I'm sitting here while Seth's talking, trying to,
and I'm writing them down too.
So we've got, so I like how you started, Seth, and that's the conditions. Like, that's something that we can't change. So that's something we do our best to make target size as one of the stressors. We make that relative to the conditions that are predicted as best we can.
Yeah.
Another one is time, and that's simple. It's just, do you have enough time to move and even flight time of your bullet? Do you have to rush? Does the shooter have to rush? Position. Is the position stable? And
how will they shoot it?
Can you get in the position? Can every shooter? We have some fun. We make positions harder for certain people to get into. We try to balance it.
I'm left-handed, but I had a little short
toy house that we had to get into and shoot out of. Obviously we had a lot of big shooters that complained. But we also gave them options. Anyways, I'll keep going with the stressors. And the fourth being, mine's drawn a blank here.
Landmarking, target acquisition.
Brains. Fourth one would be,
complication.
How complicated the sequence is. So do you have to do thinking while you're shooting? And then the fifth one, target acquisition, I would say.
So, yes. And, I have all those written down. The only thing I think the wind and stuff, you can't really control it. I guess that's all I was going to say. And it just is what it is. So I don't really think about that one, I guess, from a shooter, because I don't really have to.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys have to. In order to appropriately make it, to make the match correct, if that makes any sense. One criticism I've seen from some matches that are just like they're skull draggers and people like walk away from them just like feeling like somebody beat on them all weekend is, I don't know why, but I feel like. Usually those matches, they beat on one or two of the same stressors the entire weekend. Do you guys feel like that's true?
Yeah, absolutely.
Partially it's shooters. This group of people as a whole is generally pretty high functioning, high driven, and ego plays into those pretty hard and pretty heavy. And so if you don't give them an opportunity to repeat what they've already done, that can also cause that same feeling. But like you say, if you have the same sort of situation where they're just doing those ones are tough for sure, where you're just hammering on one target or like one thing constantly, it's tiny targets for everywhere. Oh, cool, man. Go ahead.
Yeah. If I'm a match director that writes a course of fire based on how I shoot or what I like to shoot, I think that's where you get into that problem. Like I'm a fast shooter, so I'm going to make every stage a 12 round stage.
Yep.
Is that kind of what you're talking about, Morgan?
Yeah, a little bit like that, because I know there are certain matches that I've been to where people walk away from it like, wow, those targets were so small, that was so hard, and then people just talk about how that match was just so hard and you know that. Or, man, that match the entire time, I couldn't find any targets. It was so hard to find all the targets and blah, 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 this one. It just seems like this one was so fast. I couldn't even get through half the stages. I timed out on 2/3 of the stages, and it was up and down and fast. And they just talk about that. And that was the main. And it felt like on every stage, if I was to nail down like what's the main stressor, if I had all these stressors, the five stressors, because the wind, the reason why I say it, I don't think about it is because I can't control what the wind's doing at the time, but I can look at the other five and figure out what the wind will exacerbate, I guess. And usually it's the target size, obviously, but that's why I kind of almost link them together. But you guys are the ones that have to worry about that headache.
Your positions can get wrecked from wind.
True.
But you also have mirage to add into those. For here, what we see in mirage in this desert can do the same thing, but your wind will push your positions, will push your barricades. We had an outhouse that we were shooting out of that there was a match. It was only blowing like 25 or something like that, but you couldn't. There was no way to do anything but a timing shot because of the position, because of the stability of the whole apparatus.
Yeah, no, I've been miserable. There. We shot off in Montana. I forgot, this is 2 years ago. Went up there, shot off a tree in 40 mile an hour wind. There was no shooting off a tree in 40 mile an hour. Three mil drift.
Send them.
3 mil drift. I got a one on a 12 round stage, trying to hit just the first target.
And a lot of the trick of that is so you can there go right no a course trick. Of fire on a day. Well, I'm not saying a trick about shooting off the tree. I'm saying as far as a man, you know, riding that course of fire, it can be tricky because that tree is great when it's not windy.
Yeah, no, that but guy, like all today, he had to do was cut down the rest of the tree. He could have done that day, but he didn't. We even said,
oh, I see.
We shot the first guy and went, hey. Actually, this I was the first guy, and I threw my mulligan chip in because that was when there's mulligans. But whatever. Anyways, he's like, yeah, no, just shoot it. And I was like, okay, I guess just shoot it. and then the wind broke for 2 seconds.
Yep.
And somebody got a 7 or 8, you know? Yeah. I was like, gosh. But anyway.
Invariably, yeah. If you have a condition that is unfavorable for a setup for a thing, there will invariably be somebody who shoots that thing with not that thing. It's unfair, right? They're always, if you have 30 mile an hour winds that have got a 10 mile an hour bracket, you're going to have somebody shoot it that it's a 15 steady. You're like, what the hell, man? What happened here? What is this thing? And so those are rough.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Or if it just changes direction.
You just blew the whole theory, Morgan, that you stopped the wind, by the way. I don't know if you caught that, but.
Yeah. Well, I did that day. I wish. But no, I don't know. I just know that I think sometimes, because I can usually in a matchbook, especially afterwards, because I've already shot the stages, I can write down okay, this is the main one or main two on everything. And I've done this a few times after matchbooks, and I go through the matchbook, and my favorite matches are the ones where I write down each one of them pretty equal. But there's not very many matches that do that. I think you guys have put on some of the closest that I can get to all around. They will test you on all those levels. But there's certain matches that everybody's like, yeah, that's a hard match. But yet at the same time, yeah, it's a hard match. And I don't think the reason why it pisses people off so much, and I think the reason why that makes what your guys' match, even though they're still difficult, and you can get away with having stages at times being more difficult than, say, somebody else can, because you take a guy, I'm going to use Paul, sorry, I know you're listening, but I'm going to use Paul as an example, but if you take Paul and you put him in a stage that, say, positions are below 18 inches, so he can't get real low, and then it's 90 seconds and it's 12 rounds and 6 of those 18 inch positions, Paul's not getting through all of them. But if you do 20 of those stages like that, Paul's going to be pissed, and he's not going to come back, because you tested him on, well, it's not a position problem for anybody else, but it
how's
is for him.
Yeah. How's your hips working out?
I have to defend Paul a little bit though on this one, because we just, this last match, we had an up down stage. It was a 12 round up down stage, and he cleaned it. And he was motivated to get through that thing. And
well, but he shot it different, didn't he? He probably shot it with a double pull.
No, he was up on the ground, off the ground, but he was, he rushed it and.
They crushed that thing.
Okay.
Can Paul do it? Yes. But can Paul do it 20 times in a row? No, because
I was really impressed.
You know what I mean? And I get that. So, I mean, I don't know much about it because I'm young and I'm still, can beat the crap out of myself and still walk the next day. Paul can't do that, and I understand. So
we should clarify, not everybody knows we're talking which Paul we're talking
about. Okay, this is Paul Higley. Yeah, Paul Higley, he's if you guys don't know who Paul is, just listen to 70% of the episodes and you'll get to know Paul. He's like the jolliest guy in the PRS.
He is a happy human, and it's cool. It's super cool because he's also a good dude. You forgot
No,
that part.
he is a great guy. One of my better friends. I really like Paul. But the reason why I can do that is because, like, that's not Paul's strong suit. Now, if you turned around on the next stage and it was a troop line out to 1,200 yards, laid down in the prone with 1.5 minute targets, Paul's gonna clean that stage. So he drops three on that one, he'll make it up on the next one and be fine and be happy, and Paul won't be mad at all. But if you know what I'm saying, if that makes any
For
sense,
sure. No,
because
for sure.
that's a different stressor, and that's one of my that's kind of my complaint, I guess I would say, with the way a lot of guys do things, is they think about, man, I love this, and
Well, yeah, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right about that. That people try to play against what the one track, right? You get a one track mind of what you want to engage with. Brian and I will sit down when we ride a course of fire. Like we just wrote one today where we got a club match running tomorrow. We're gonna go shoot that thing, but we'll go through, ride out this course of fire, and then appear look at it to see which ones have what is similar with every one of these. If you've got the same, it's three positions, three targets, you're just two, three targets. Over and over, you could see it pretty readily if you look at those things from the outside. But I see what you're saying with the most. There's a lot of match directors, not all of them. There's a lot who will do this, just chuck it in. They're just the gimmies. Like Brian and I joke about making a stay or a match, and I think it would probably be the last match we ever ran with 20 stages of ladders. We just chuck up 20 stages of ladders, and then you something some ladder shenanigans are going to go on in every stage. Because it would be hilarious, except for the part where people spent their good money to go do that stupid thing. Like that for sure is what you're saying. Like that does track. You know, you make five positions on every stage to shoot one target. You're gonna get pretty tired of five positions, one target.
Yeah, and I don't want to dog on somebody
For sure.
that doesn't know it or understand it, but sometimes it's nice to know your biases, I guess,
Yeah, for
and
sure.
kind of like take it, be able to like look at it and be like, man, okay. Or if you're like me and you go to a match and you're like, man, why did I not like that match as much as say another one? And then you go, oh, okay. And I think a lot of times there, you don't even have to have a match as tough,
For
or
sure.
you or at the same time, it's also forgiving because you don't have to have a match as easy in order to please everybody, because everybody has their strengths, and as long as you spread the difficulty out across several different, hold on. As long as you can spread that out, then I think you're going to end up being all right.
Yeah, and but that well, like to go back to what Brian and I were what Brian was talking about earlier with the percentages, a lot of those can be like the way to fix those is super easy with looking at what stages sucked, what stages didn't guys hit a lot on, what stages didn't flow in that to make that run. The metrics of how many cleans, how many zeros, what was the average hit percent? And you look at those, and if you get 10% cleans, that's cool, but how many zeros were there? If there was 10% zeros, that's pretty tough. That's pretty nasty. Those guys probably won't want to come back if they're getting zeros on multiple stages on a high level. And the more of them you get, the more guys that are getting it. Not to say that a guy can't get a zero. That's fine. If something
No,
goes
I've got a
sideways that doesn't
zero.
work,
It happens.
everyone is zeroed. That's fine. But if you've got high percentages of your match is zeros, what was the goal? If it's something like AG Cup, then your audience, you know, could be you can tune it, right? You can tune to that audience. You can tune to those customers, those people, that thing. But if you get into average run-of-the-mill matches, even when you're trying to make them harder, you put on a couple more stressors, but still have it available, like you say, spread it around on what you're testing and what you're shooting. The guy who shoots the best will still come up on top. The guy who shoots the best is still going to win the match. It's not.
I believe that almost most of the time, the best guy is gonna win. There's
Most
very
of the time, yep.
most of the time, unless
Yep, no, that's real.
there's certain circumstances that might not be perfect, but I do think that
Well, we
it
can
can
talk
be
about those
improved.
too. You mean like stages that are written that leave too much the chance?
Yeah.
That can ruin that scenario where the best guy wins the match.
Yeah.
Like you got a tiny target, you got to hit 10 times, and the wind is going to change throughout the day.
Yeah,
You
but
might.
how do you how can you have that stage? Is that stage
No.
inappropriate to have?
It's inappropriate.
Ever.
Absolutely. It doesn't meet our 60% rule, and it shouldn't be in there.
How small's too small?
It depends on the distance, in our
And conditions.
opinions, and the conditions.
Okay.
Conditions and distance. Again.
I can agree with that. I think
And
I th
your lead up, right? And your lead up of what you've got before to that target. If you want to put a tiny target a long ways out, you better have one that's within a second shot before it, similar distance that's hittable.
I've talked about this quite a bit with some of the Oklahoma boys, and something I've, 'cause they're like, man, you could standardize target sizes pretty easy, and I'm like, I don't know if that's
Don't
gonna
think you
be,
can.
and but I mean, in their defense, I think it was Clay, and I never, in his defense, I don't think it's a bad idea, because then it's just the wind, you can whatever, 'cause it wasn't an unfair tar or I mean sizing system. It was like, I want to say he was saying like 3/10 to 400 and 4/10 to 400 to 600, half mil to 600 to 900, and 6/10 plus everywhere else.
Those are good sizes for,
Yeah, it
those are
depends
pretty
on
good
your.
sizes for a lot of stuff.
But you've got other stressors too that you got to factor in there.
I
So you got
know.
to
I know. Trust me. I know.
have another category if you're going to add a stressor, and another category if you're going to add a third
But
stressor.
you got to
That
remember,
works great for a trip line.
every now and again, and I'm speaking in broad generalities, but I also like to joke around. But I call everything positional in that state barricade prone.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So the position doesn't work. I mean, everything's cemented in the ground, or it weighs over 200 pounds and ain't going anywhere. So when you put your gun and bag on it, you can back off the thing, look through the scope, and it's rock solid, and you tap the trigger.
Yeah, that's not a fun thing to have on every
I'm
case,
not
though.
saying that that's exactly how they do it, okay? I get it. There's some science to it all. In fact, like, and it can be done very well and to a high level, and they're very good. And even when you get them outside of there, I just like to tease them. But I like that as a competitor, as a shooter, as a guy that shoots a lot. I would love to see those numbers as far
But
as like target sizes.
those numbers don't apply to our current selection of shooters at every
Exactly.
match.
At not at
They
every match,
apply.
not in
Yeah, but
every scenario.
they apply to the top 20% guys would be okay with those numbers. 20% doesn't fill more matches and bring back more people.
No.
Those numbers are fun, super fun, right, to shoot, but if you get into it, like that's the sizing. And
Well,
obviously, he's looked at the wind brackets to see where it's going to fit because you've got those limits on it, and that works really well for a troop line for sure. But it
yeah, I
doesn't fit
think,
all the
and that works
shooters.
great for troop lines. The only thing is, I just don't know. I mean, they have wind too, so they get that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're used to it, and they're used to smaller targets. I mean, and I'm used to smaller targets, so I get it. And so, like, that's where I get it. I know I would fare very well in those conditions. So I'm like, yeah, cool, that'd be great. But it
Well,
also
speaking
benefits
of,
me.
yeah, for sure. Speaking of Clay, I can promise you that on March 4th, this year, we are going to have the best match on that weekend west of the Rockies.
I'm sorry, Clay. I'm sure you, if you're listening. But
yeah, that sucks. It sucks being stacked on another match.
I know.
It's one that you want to go to.
I want to go because they got belt buckles, just saying, boys.
Oh shit, belt buckles. Yeah, it sucks to run matches. Like, part of the giant pain in the ass, like, match directing is work. It's not as easy as it might appear as far as stacking up, getting all of these things. You're working on these things for 9 months to get them in there, and then now we're on top of somebody else's match, and you don't want to be. You're like, ah, damn it. Like, that's pulling from a similar pool out of, like, the Utah-Colorado guys. That sucks. Like, that's, you know, that's not something you want to do.
Which, and hopefully maybe now, you know, with the maybe change in administration, you might be able to make that phone call in the future, which I don't know. Now I'm just talking here, but maybe you might be able
wasn't just that either. Because, we tried to move this one around a bunch, trying to get this thing to fit into everybody's schedule. Gotcha. And there was another match that was too close to us regionally that ended up moving their match that we called. We're like, hey, man, can we move your match a bit so we can get in that spot? Because we don't want to be next to these other guys. And it wasn't anything to do with the over hierarchy. And it rarely is most of the time. Because I ran the PRS regionals deal for a while. And then I ran, you know, trying to get these things organized, trying to get them to all stack up. And we're dealing with quite a few matches in our area. And there's just some of these just do not come together. It's just a giant pain in the ass to try to get this schedule mapped out a year in advance, and then you get 6 months out and you're like, shit, we missed it. We missed half of it.
Yeah.
Those things are a pain, huge pain. And then trying to get all your sponsors together to be organized in that same space, trying to get all the shooters to be on that thing. Try to look at the rest of the schedule to see, are they going to travel to that match or this match, or are, you know, trying to get it set up to where we want to make a cool event, and we can't make a cool event if it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. If people aren't showing up, you don't keep doing it. The outdoor match, like we run, is something. It's something that's like these. They're a field style. They're not necessarily field matches. They're not super common. Rocks. We really like Rocks, like a lot.
Yeah,
I love Rocks.
Speaking of Rocks, let's talk about this venue that we've got for this match coming up. We've got a pile of rocks. I mean, just giant rocks. And we're going to set up our stages, and we got, shoot off of these rocks. So going to mix in some barricades too, of course, but the setting is in the canyon. It's not on top like where I usually shoot, but it's inside the canyon, and we can shoot 360 degrees at this venue. So our firing line set up in a giant circle. And so match flow should be great. And some of the shooters have shot there before on a regional match, but we've taken that firing line and just expanded it probably double, because we've got 20 stages all in a circle there. And so on one side, you've got the Snake River Canyon wall that we've got targets almost to the top. So we've got some high angle stuff there. And shooting down the canyon, we've actually got some sand dunes, and like legit sand dunes, in both directions that we've got targets on. And so, and then we've got some stuff on the other side where we've got a hay field that we can set some targets out. So that's more of that diversity. And so we've got, we can eliminate that, stressor of target acquisitions on that side for sure. So it's a really cool place to shoot.
Yeah.
And the same with our hunter match that'll come up. We found a new venue to utilize for that. Our hunter match in April, end of April, we're going to run after that, is up in the foothills, transitioning into the mountains here on another giant pile of rocks, which I don't know if you've noticed the trend of rocks, but
I mean, in that country. It's rocks everywhere.
There's rocks everywhere like that. Yeah, like the national championship that we just ran, there was huge rocks. That place is super cool, but you don't want to overuse the same range if you can help it.
Yeah, I mean,
you do what you got access to.
I mean, yeah, I was gonna say you say that, but that's 100% the first world problems, because like you talk
yes,
about,
it,
like,
yeah.
I mean,
yes,
then there's K&M where, like, I mean, that's what
that's
you
it.
Utilized. It's
that's,
K,
no, for
K
sure.
and M, you know, like.
We're
I mean,
spoiled
that's,
as shit.
That's it. I mean, I'm not saying that K&M's not amazing, because it is probably one of the coolest places.
Phenomenal place to
Yeah, I
shoot.
mean, it's
Yep,
a
I agree.
golf course that we call Rifle Range, which is pretty dang unique and cool.
It's really cool, yeah.
But like out here, it's like what I think it makes it cool, and things like in places like Oklahoma and Kansas, Nebraska, stuff like that. At least those are the, I guess, states in the middle of this country. But then out here in the Intermountain West air, like you can pretty much most of these matches are just somebody knows a farmer or a rancher or something, and that's where we have a match. And so you go put up all the targets, and then a lot of times all them targets got to come back down because it's not a
Always, yeah.
permanent range.
And it's a giant pain in the ass.
Yep.
Yeah,
So
no, the work side of it is it does suck. It would be super nice to build a match on a fixed range where the targets didn't have to, or you could just drive to each one. That'd be great. If I could just drive my fat ass out there, I would appreciate that very much.
I
Because
don't know how
it
you guys
is.
do that if you can't drive to most of them. That would suck so
You just
bad.
walk
Well, we really
usually.
hope they don't go down.
Lamborghinis. Oh, dude. At the championship, that long, what was it, like a 900-yard elk or 850 or something, shot a post in half somehow. And we had to run out there on the clock to get, because everybody's just waiting, watching, like, hey, what are those guys? And it was
It's hard to describe. It's you won't get the
nasty.
picture based on this description, but I almost died of heart attack.
Yeah, so it's probably only like 200 or 300 vertical feet of climb, and it's 110 degrees outside, and we're sprinting up this rocky mountain to go haul ass out there while every like, and we yeah try not to wreck the side by side to get to the base of the little hill. Yes, those things are tough, and trying to design targetry, trying to work with whatever system you've got in order to not have failures is tough because target failures suck. And if you're on a fixed range, it'd be super cool if you could go and do like where Brian and I were talking about this, do all AR posts everywhere and have super heavy targets and things that are on nice hooks that won't come apart. And it's just not applicable in some of the spaces we're running in.
No, I mean, just the cost rewards when it just doesn't make any sense when you pull every T post back out of the ground and you go, oh, that one sucks, and you throw it in the trash and you get another T post.
And it is a business, right? We're not doing this just because we feel like this is more, we feel special about it. The reason I started running matches was because there wasn't anybody else running matches right here at that time. That was it. But that was, I wanted to shoot. I like shooting. I like shooting precision rifle. I shoot like shooting the hunter stuff. It doesn't matter. I want to go shoot. I'm gonna go shoot pistol carbine here next week or 2 weeks. I wanted matches to run, and then you get to looking at them, you're like, well, I could change this, this, and this because I see these metrics that can be shifted and manipulated in order to make a better match because I want to make a match that I want to go shoot. And then Brian's the same exact guy. Like, it's the same. It was wild.
We like to shoot in the mountains. We like to shoot in canyons. We like shooting where it takes a little extra energy to put targets.
Yeah,
You know, and
it
that
is.
we're willing to do that because we hope there's enough people out there that also think it's cool.
And I do think you guys are on the right track because I think a lot of people see that. At least around here, they get to because you guys put on. It's got to be. I don't know. I just. Your guys' matches have been good to me, so I know I'm biased.
You have done fairly decent at most every one I've been involved with. There was a couple there that in the beginning that you weren't as happy at, and that was a tough day, but you can't win them all. Just like when you make a shitty stage, it happens.
That just happens, right?
If you're not trying, you're never going to make a bad one.
Well, I mean,
They'll all be
I
bad.
remember I was sitting in a match once and you went, well, that was one of the testers. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I don't like that concept, that theory of just a bunch of trash and then like three dividers. I would like to make it to where a good shooter can shoot the same match, the same stages as an average guy and still be able to drop, make a mistake or two and still not be completely smashed to 50th place.
Well,
I'd like it
no,
to be.
you were saying it as in the testers, I know what you're saying. I didn't mean to cut you off, but you were
No.
meaning like the state that I remember the target was going
Separator
down,
stages, but yeah.
and you're like, oh, that's one of them targets I was testing.
Oh,
Oh,
yeah.
yes. Oh, yeah. No, there is constantly those as well.
You're like, I was test that because you didn't put it out very far, and you're like, I just wanted to see if it even worked.
Is that the
Yeah,
one that
no, yeah.
John shot in half?
Yeah, that's
No, different
exactly the
one.
one. Or it
Yeah,
was one of those.
no.
It was
It
on.
was
It
the
was
other
like the.
range.
It was on. We're shooting off a rock pile at like.
Or maybe it was John's boat. Ron's. Yeah, you're probably right. It probably was.
And you
Yeah,
had to
no.
throw it out because it like completely went down.
No. No,
Or
I
no, you
didn't throw
didn't
that.
throw
That
it. No, you didn't throw it out.
see,
That's right. You
I
didn't
that
throw it
you were
out.
talking about a different stage. So the stage you're talking about was run in the other canyon. The stage that it was a troop line near to far, and I had some targets hanging super close, and they were made out of 550 instead of making them out of 500 or 400 on the AR plate. And so those 550 is super brittle, and you're smashing on it. And the design on it wasn't didn't lend itself to not having stress fractures on the internal corners of them. But that was exactly right, because you were standing right there. I'm like, well, that was a good test. It didn't work.
Yep.
And then it happened again with John's deal, because I was testing a different hanger system on a super close target. Those close targets are wild to test to not make them fail because of the energy that's being transferred into those things.
Dude,
Each
there's not for
shotgun, you got to be careful.
Jake's
Go ahead.
system might be the best for that, just because of the springs.
The poppers,
Yeah.
yeah, I like
Yeah.
those poppers.
Yeah,
Those are great.
those are pretty sweet. But to touch back on that, John Pinch maybe did one of the biggest solids I've ever had anybody do in a match when he went ahead and shot a maybe 10th wide little ground squirrel head because the rest of the target had blown off. And
And it was at the end of the day,
at the end of
and
the day, he could have stopped, legitimately would have not been being whiny, wouldn't have been being upset. It would have been legitimate for him to say, you know what, I want to wait, you go fix that target. It would have taken me an hour and a half of trying to get
I
that
think he
thing
still got
straightened
it.
back up. Yeah, and he shot the thing. He didn't miss that tiny, tiny, like it was tiny. And it was kind of windy and kind of nasty. He's like, well, I'll shoot it. So he hits it, and then he misses the like legitimate size target that was
Yeah,
next
he
to
didn't
him.
miss that one. I remember that.
No, yeah, he hit this little tiny, and all you could see was the splash on it from the previous shooters where they had shot it. It was maybe a tenth total, maybe. Like if you're pulling on it, it was a tenth. It was, yeah, and then he went ahead and missed the target like two targets later on the troop. He's like, oh no. But yeah, that was one of the cooler things that I've seen a shooter do. Like, you know what? This sucks for everybody. I'm shooting it. Like, that was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Well,
but no, we like to test things. I personally enjoy testing targets to see what fails, and I want to get rid of the things that fail. We had the championship. This last championship, we had some targets get pushed over
yeah, on
on
some
AR
AR pose.
post. Yeah, they got
Just
blown.
'cause they were in some sand.
Yeah, it was wild, and you couldn't tell as they got kicked over. They were getting hit repeatedly and repeatedly. You couldn't tell that they were, because they were close to the dirt and closer to the dirt and closer to the dirt. And so you would, to look at them, you could still see the target there until the very end of the day. And who knows how long it was actually laying on the ground. And that target and the hangar were just straight on the ground. So when you shot the dust around it, you could see the shadow of the target. So it looked like you could kind of see the target, and then it would get obscured with dust, and then you couldn't see the target at all. So half of those shooters at the end of that thing couldn't even see the thing. But you can't tell that. You couldn't see that thing until you went, and then we went down there and looked at it, and you're like, oh, it's over, like completely over.
And the conditions are so bad, you probably couldn't really see it.
No, exactly. You couldn't see, all you could see, like, because for a long time you could see the shadow of the target behind it on the ground. So you're like, oh no, it's still up, because there were shooters like, oh, this target's down, this target's down. And you look and you're like, I don't think so. I think it's still up. And exactly like you see, it wasn't clear.
Well, it was designed to be shot prone. You had the option to shoot that target prone when we first started, but
Yeah,
as it tipped over slowly, nobody said anything, and people were they lost that option because it was a hunter match,
you
and
can't
you don't really
reshoot
talk
anything.
about it. So,
Yeah, you can't re yeah, and by the time you look at it, you're like, no, the target's still up. But yeah,
yeah.
it had dropped 2 feet in elevation. By the end, it was just completely on the ground. But it's still on its hanger, still on the post.
Right.
Just it slid
Yeah.
all the way down.
Because it had just blown backwards until it was laying on the
Oh,
ground.
okay.
Yeah, it was
Just
just click,
tipped
click,
over.
click, click. Yeah, I've never had one do that before, that target.
So you've talked about a few
Which.
times that you guys will, after the match, you'll do like a little kind of powwow, get together and like look at these metrics, to decide like, okay, that was a good stage, that's a bad stage. What, in you guys' opinion, like what are you guys looking at? You talked about the 6 out of 10 or average score
That's for the
being say a
design.
5 or something like that.
Yeah, that's when we go to design it. Yeah, but it's the number of the percentage of cleans, percentage of zeros,
Average score.
average score.
Yeah, if you've got high concentrations of. So after a match, and I think we've had one, maybe, or two matches apiece out of all the club and all the other things that we were like, you know what? The whole match was great. That's one or two, which is wild that we can't seem to replicate it every time. But we'll generally go back, and we'll go back stage by stage, and you'll go look at all the results to see from the bottom, from the top, who's doing what. If it's got high levels of cleans, it's way more acceptable than high levels of zeros. You can't stop everybody from missing entirely, but you can. I would rather see a match with 95% hit rate if that's the difference than a 70% hit rate. If the match is clean with a 70% hit rate, that means that the average score in that thing was closer to 35, 40% if you're stretching on it. And that those people didn't have a good time. Those people don't
Yeah,
want to come back.
I
They
tend
did.
to agree. Even the
If
PRS
you're
in their rule book says that they feel like that you should be between 85 and 95% on your hit rates.
Can keep the top hit
Yeah, we
rate,
shoot for 85.
I think
yeah.
maybe it's a little bit, maybe it's
80's
80 to
good.
95. No, I think it's an 85 to 95. That's what they say. I think 85 is the honorable goal. I think no higher. I think maybe keeping people trying, like designing a one that on the right day with the right shooter, it could go 95, but almost impossible to clean. But
How many
yet,
matches have ever been cleaned, really?
well,
There's a
just
handful.
one
That's
day,
a
a
small.
couple of
Yes.
days.
The AG Cup for
Well, that
sure.
was a day.
Yeah, one day. But
But
even
then
then still.
several people have done a day. You know what I mean?
Yes, for sure. But it's super tough, even with the most ridiculous layouts and the most ridiculously easy stuff. It's super tough to go 100% clean. So if you do any work into that space, generally, it's you don't get it. But you got to know what shooters are
I
coming.
think it was
If
Pinch that
you
said the had the best comment on Gossett on that. He's just like, more than anything, like that just takes a freaking a good shooting gun.
has to stay, everything, all the things stay together, right?
Yeah, like Gossett was on, but Gossett's gun was on fire. Yeah.
Yeah, for
And
sure.
he's the gunsmith, so there's that.
Well, he also crushed that part of it. Look at him
Yeah.
crushing all of the
Yeah,
things
he did
all at the same
everything.
time. That's cool. That's badass to see. But when you're building a match for those metrics, for these things to come together, you're gonna design it. If we're writing the AG Cup, of course, of fire, it's gonna look drastically different than if we're writing the club match that we just did today.
Of course.
You know, you don't. You gotta understand that the 80%, the bottom 80%, are the guys who are you're entertaining. The guys at the top, you want to come back because they have that status or that celebrity. But those guys are addicts, man. Like it's us. We're gonna go shoot some stuff even when it's terrible and be like, nah, I hated it, but I'm probably gonna go shoot some more stuff. Like,
Yeah, well, like that's what I've who was it? They're like when there was a certain match, a certain in Utah that people were like, I don't know. You like maybe we should try to boycott this. And I was like, you guys have fun with that. I'll be there. Like I'm going to the
it's an
match.
hour away.
Like I have
I think that
no.
was you and I having that conversation, and you're like, yeah, I probably should just hold out, but I have zero self-control in this regard. I'm gonna go shoot it and see what
Yeah,
happens.
I'm like, oh, it's way too close to me. I'm definitely going.
Understandably,
Like,
yeah, the
I
top guys.
understand everything about the honorable desire to boycott and all that stuff, but I just can't do it.
Now, you want to make a match that everybody, if you choose to, can enjoy. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy. Doesn't mean, like, I don't want to go out there and just do layup shots all day, every day, the whole day. You get into like even 2 day PRS matches or 2 day hunter matches or whatever, you want to be, so your metric has to, your stressors have to increase a little bit to match that, so that you still have the same hit percentage with the field, so that you've got 20 guys there who are legitimate, or 40 or whatever that number, right, for that match is going to change depending on the venue and the situation. Say you've got 20, 40 guys who are legitimate contention for top five placement guys. You're going to write that so that those guys have something to test, so that they have something to stress on, so that it's not the win that decides out of them. It's they have to shoot well and make whoever makes the least amount of mistakes wins the match. That situation is all comes from, like we were talking with, back to the overarch on each stage. You go to each stage, you look at, well, what made a stage get 30% zeros? Why did that get 30% zeros? A lot of times, like at a club level match, it's something as simple as too much movement. So too much movement on top of your landmarks were no good. So if you didn't have strong landmarks and you moved them around a bunch, they didn't get any shots off. Those things can be straightened out pretty straightforward, and then they transfer over. But then you see one that goes well, and they'll be vanilla sometimes, and sometimes they're not. Sometimes you'll get surprised. So between Brian and I've talked to Brian about it, where it seems like I'm super vanilla with a lot of my courses of fire until I go to look at them, and then I'm like, wait a minute, I was way more chaotic than Brian's deal. Like, so we're so close together in that space of writing these stages to be entertaining, to be good hit percentage, but not 100% clean. That's not fun either.
We went through our analysis after our last match, and it was our last club match, and it ended up being one of those where it was almost a good, you know, almost met all the criteria. We had one stage that was too easy, and on that stage I put something in that I've never done before. The shooters had to keep track of their cumulative impacts, and based on that they moved to the numbered position based on how many hits they got, and it was just some railroad ties stacked up. You know, you've seen that barricade before. But everybody talked about that. Wow, that is cool. It ended up being too easy. So was that a stage that we shouldn't have done? I don't think so.
No, never.
That was a cool stage. That was a cool idea. You just put another stressor on it, right? Long term, yeah. You want to change that just a bit. Is you put up two targets
or another target? Yeah.
Yeah, two targets right there, and then now you have an awesome stage. The cool idea. But if you don't do that, that was a super cool idea. To make it that addition on there made it so it was interesting and engaging. It just, the target shots weren't tough enough to make that stressful for what we thought our field would enjoy, which is still pretty good. We had eight stages, and one stage was just, and it wasn't even like super easy. It was, I think the clean percent was something like 15 to 20%. It wasn't 100, it wasn't 50%.
Yeah.
Those things change how you write your course fire, your match.
Yeah.
So, well, it kind of changes subject. Are you guys, yeah. I know, so at your match, we're going to do, like the day before or something like that, you're going to do a skill stage? Is that what's going on?
I was hoping you'd bring that up. I wasn't quite sure how to do that. So, yeah, and thank you for doing this. I think it's going to be amazing. So we've got you running a stage, and I have to say to your listeners, I called Morgan and said, hey, will you do this for me? And no hesitation at all. And he said, yep. Happy to help. So Morgan's going to be there. You are going to be there on Friday running a stage, a tutorial for a PRS skills stage. And
we also need to thank Lone Peak 1,000 times over for their support in this match and helping us. We're building a rifle and we're giving away ammo to shoot this stage with Lone Peak, and with Garrett's going to build the rifle, but Garrett Priest with Priest Precision.
Ammo's coming from Eagle Eye.
There's no support in that space, in that thing, makes it really cool as well.
I think,
so it's going to be free to all the shooters. and you're going to get to go through and test the match rifle. We're going to have a burner barrel on it just so that we can give it away on the table too. But you're going to get to go through a PRS skill stage and with some critique from, in my
with
advice,
or without, I guess
best.
You don't have
yeah, with
to,
or
you don't
without,
have
you don't
to,
have to,
you don't have to have any of my advice. But if you want some or any feedback or anything, or if you just want me to pick up your brass and tell you what your time is, cool. It's easy.
And the winner will likely get a banana hammock that's branded with the match logo.
I need to get on that.
I'll bet that's Seth's doing.
No, I was against it, but it wasn't mine.
No, that was our, that was Brian Black's idea, I think, wasn't it?
Really?
Yeah,
I think it was my idea.
I figured it's got to be.
It?
Okay. It's his trademark idea.
He was
idea.
Really on board with it.
Yeah, they were very supportive of my, like, so you guys want to do like banana hammocks or something? They're like, what? Yes. Oh, shit. Maybe
it's going to happen.
Yeah, great. Now I got to figure out how to get hold of those. Hopefully we get leopard print or something cool. I don't know. I don't just want like black. That's not very fun.
Yeah, that's leopard print banana hammock with the freaking Gem State logo right in the middle of it. They're not going to think, because you know what, that diamond right in the middle of it?
Yeah.
Like, people are not going to think that's the Snake River.
We changed the logo. It's not the same diamond logo anymore.
Okay, well, if it was that, it's not.
That would
look...
be a delight right there on the front.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll make a couple just for you, bud.
Yeah.
You can direct the stage.
Bring it back.
Yeah. Look. Hey, get in here. I'm sure it'll be a balmy, somewhere sub 60 degree day.
Balmy.
Yeah. Hopefully it's 60 and not. I mean, conditions will be great. There's no way they're bad.
No, not in March, not in Idaho. They're going to be perfect.
No, I guarantee you it's probably going to be blowing 15 miles an hour. And
safe well, is 10 to 20. Yeah.
It's going to feel.
The good thing is that we have all those
20.
Windmills right on all those windmills right on top to slow the wind down.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
Killing birds and slowing that wind down.
They're here for your benefit. They're going to save you.
That's what they say.
I heard that on the internet. Them and Gandhi coming back.
Yeah, they last so long.
That power is so nice to store at that time of year. Yeah, let me just put some of that in my pocket for later.
Yeah, no. But
we could get sidetracked on that.
Yeah, we could.
I've got nerd if you want.
Anyway, we don't really know what stage we're doing yet, right? Because we don't know if there's a new one coming or not.
Yeah, I'd like to do the new one. We could do number two because of that famous run at the championship.
I didn't do that.
25
famous run.
Well,
yeah, I know, but
you know what I'm talking
and
about.
I've been sitting there and I've done a lot of since then. Done a little practicing because I'm like, I've never practiced this. And I'm like, well, you guys practice this because they did. And I know this. And I'm like, I don't know. I just never thought it would be a good idea to really do that. Even though I love that stage, you know. And I'm like, man, how do we get faster at this? How do we do it? And it's like, man, the first time I did it with just like going all out, I showed up, Paul had cemented one in the ground, and no joke, he videoed it, and he's like, all right. He's like, okay, just go. And I didn't practice, no dry fire, nothing. I just looked at the target, checked my mag, put it in there. I don't even think I looked at my cash. I said, what's your dope? He says, this, and I was like, okay. And I dialed that on my scope, but that's close enough. And I sat there.
Decision.
Yeah, I said, all right, let's go. Well, it's a 10-inch plate. I'm like, who cares?
I know.
And
glad to see you went through all of your pre-stage checks.
Yeah, I didn't. I was just, like, showing up and we're going to do some practicing. I turned my hat around because I got to do that, or I'm going to whack it every time with a bolt, and that'll slow you down. And then I just went, all right. And I got down, and I went as fast as I could go, like all out, but just tried to be really smooth, but it's just, I mean, just boom, boom, Move, boom, boom,
Burning it down,
move,
yeah.
boom, boom, move, boom, boom, move, and done. And last shot was 29:30. Is I don't know. I have it in my phone, but it was
That's
29.
fast. That seems fairly quick, yeah.
I haven't
Yeah.
beat it. I think I've sorry, I might have beat it, but it's but nothing's been faster than 29.
You know why that's really good practice?
I
Is
don't.
because it tells you exactly how you shouldn't be shooting. And
It
I'm only
teaches you.
barely kidding because I mean I practiced some after all that and I got done. I'm like, I didn't see a single bullet. I didn't see a single impact. And I'm
Really?
like,
See, I can't
really?
force myself to do that.
It's
Yeah, I
a bastard to do that, to
and then I'm
abandon
like,
those.
how many times do I do that when I'm pressed for time? And so I'm back to ground zero. I'm like, I really need to slow down.
See,
So
this
it
highlights you, the you saying that highlights what I've tried to tell people so much is it's like when you're thinking about other things, you don't see the bullets. And so that's why I'm trying to tell people you have to learn how to shoot and how to just play the game before you can even start to see the bullet.
Yeah,
If that makes any
hyper
sense.
focus in that space. Yeah, no, hyper focus in that space on your job of planting that bullet, right? That's its own.
Yeah, and you're talking to him earlier. I forget who you're talking to. Anyway, talking about seeing your impacts on the plate, and I'm thinking back, and I'm like, do I see my impacts on the plate, or do
Dude,
I just watch the swing?
there's days I
And
don't see it all the time, and it has to do with focus on and how much I'm paying attention. And I have to like, if I start losing it, I start have to like really kind of pull myself back and question, okay, where was that bullet? Because then
It
I.
is curious. It is curious that when you do, like you're saying, when you stop and focus on that thing, you can make yourself bring it back to where you see the bullets hit again. Because, like, yeah, I don't see them all the time either. But you do the same thing, and then you get to where you're focusing on it, and then you see them all again. And you start seeing them stack up again. You start seeing, you're like, no, that hit right there. I could see on that. I need to come 10th and a half left in order to center that thing to bring the next shot in. And it's tough when you're running, like you guys are talking with the PRS or the stage when you're tempted to abandon your bullets in flight. Like you set them
Yeah.
free, you're like, oh, where'd you go? Where'd you go? Okay, now I can go. Like those are tough.
It's so I think I it sounds cliche, but you see what you look for. And
If you're focusing on that thing, for me it was more a matter. I had to slow down my shooting in order to get better, because so
you
Brian and I
it's
shoot
true,
very similar.
but like I guess in my opinion, and like if you're going too fast and you're doing this other stuff, then you're definitely
Yeah.
not going to look for
No, exactly.
it.
You weren't. You just don't have the time. You're not taking the time. You're not demanding that critique of that shot of that thing in order to make that bullet hit when you need, because that's your job. Your job is to hit the target in front of you, not the next four. It's not the ones you missed. It's the one right now. Do your
Yeah.
job. Hit the target,
People
right?
have an inability to like to like hit the push the clutch in, shift down, let it out.
Yeah, I don't think they have the inability. I think it's the lack of training in that precision, and not everybody has
Which
to
is the
handle that
lack of
ball.
ability, right?
It's not the lack of, you can teach
No,
that. You
No,
can.
you can learn it. You just haven't acquired the ability yet.
Okay. Oh, all right. I'll give you that. Yeah. No. Yeah, they def not everybody is
They don't have the
massively able.
lack of capacity.
Yeah. So.
Well,
Okay.
now you're but no,
Yeah.
like I just, you know what I mean? I feel like people have the They probably have the ability to do it.
Just haven't done it, the practice
They've
part.
never
No, that
done it.
makes sense.
They have the capacity to do it, but they don't understand what they need to do. That they don't need it. They need to shift, and then as soon as they see where the bullet goes, they need to shift back up, go, and then back down when the bolt closes.
It's actually why Brian and I started doing the 60% rule on our trying to make our stages the way we make them. It's because if you just slow down and shoot, man, you'll hit every one of those targets.
It's
On the
true.
first 60%, yeah.
Yeah, you shoot those six first six shots. They're easy shots. If you just shoot them and don't worry about the other four, now you have a 60% hit rate ratio. You know, you get into the ratios of what you're hitting. If you're not hitting, you're hitting 50, 35%, you're not getting any better. If you look at that, you know, like, well, maybe I should just back off and hit those first shots. If you miss none of the shots you take, you crushed it. Like that's tough. And then if you want to get better, just push your speed a little bit after that. More of that engaging. And you see a lot training people and teaching people, trying to get them into this thing to build their just confidence in hitting the target. They clock goes off, everybody mounts. Like if you don't
Oh,
have to
yeah.
mount.
Well, and that's why I think probably it is relevant to practice this the skill stage two, which is the four positions, one target, because you can boost that speed. Because if you can start to run it in, say, under 40 seconds, well, now you know you're pretty quick. And if you're doing that, doing everything fundamentally sound, that's checking your level
Don't.
every shot, doing all that type of stuff. Everything is good. And you're doing it
And
under
not
40
abandoning.
seconds, not abandoning the things you need to do. Like to get under 30, you're gonna have to abandon ship on a few
Yeah,
things.
absolutely.
Just is what it is. Whatever. You know, you're gonna have to turn your level down in sensitivity. You're gonna have to do a lot of stuff and just go with
Turn
it.
your level off.
Maybe that's what happens. I don't know. Maybe so. It could be one thing, it could be another. But I don't know.
And when you're running that hot, that fast, and I've been down, well, right, we're in the high 20s before as well, practicing, but then I'm only cleaning maybe one out of every four runs at that rate. So then is it worth it?
I don't
Not if you're
know.
not cleaning it.
I
Not if you're cleaning it.
feel like you I don't know. I feel like there's got to be a way. I can't make myself go past it because I can clean it almost every freaking time. I just can't freaking go any faster than 29 seconds for some reason. I mean, I can like just like burn through it and be like, whoosh, and then I'm.
You gotta go find your
I
economy
bet
of
you
motion,
can.
man.
I
Yeah,
know,
find your
but
economy.
how do I?
You
Because I mean,
what?
that's like getting the crosshair on the target, bam, bam, and then I get to the next one, bam, bam, get to the
Oh,
next
you
one,
probably need to
bam,
open this up to an
bam.
internet conversation. That'll probably
Yeah,
fix it for
that'll
you.
learn me how to
Yeah.
do
If you could just post this on the internet and then play, please critique me. But if I could do just if you could give me some of your insight, a random internet.
I do know there are certain things that I probably could do, but man, do I need to do them? No. But what it will do is it speeds me up and gets me to a comfortable pace of just operating my gun, operating my bag, operating all this other stuff to where, say, when I show up to like your match, now all of a sudden I know how to do all that stuff. It's all second nature. I can do it very, very efficiently, very fast, and then now I can go there and then I can think about all this. I don't have to think about all that stuff. I just do that stuff. And then when I close my bolt, now I can just slow down and think about where the bullet is going to go.
And let it go to its home.
Yep.
So it's interesting because Brian and I actually both shoot super fast if we don't slow down intentionally. And so you write stages like you're talking on the speed, on the thing, on who can get through this, how does this work, and can Morgan clean this out with all of his time? How much time is he going to have left? That's a super interesting concept to really pursue when you're looking at how much movement, how much thing. If you're just dropping the gun, reticle on, send it. Or is it you've got 9 second splits in order to get through this stage, or you've got, is it 7 second splits? Then you're going to be tight on trying to get these things to come together if you have very much movement. Those are super interesting concepts that go to shooting and to running the matches. It's wild to apply them to both. I think it makes you better on both all fronts to address those things. But and so
So,
like you're saying, go ahead.
Morgan, you asked me the question. We were talking about or I was rambling about a stage where you've got 10 tiny targets that you got to hit, and you asked, should that stage be in a match? And I said, no. What is your opinion?
10 tiny targets.
He said one tiny target 10 times.
Well, okay, so you have to hit so you ignore the 60-40 or 60-40 rule, and you have a stage that's just hard all the way through. Like you've got
I think there's a way to do it because you have to have that balance. You have to have it balanced, right? Enough. And I think the only way to do it is if you If you're gonna do that, then all the stages probably gonna have to be pretty similar that way.
I agree. And that match is
Depending
just
on
written for a,
conditions.
yeah, for a different audience, of course.
But you could still apply your 60-40 to it. It would just be
You
your
could,
audience
it's to
what
be
happens.
relative to your
Right.
audience,
It's
yeah.
relative to your audience. It's just you'd have to have way better shooters coming to show up if you're going to put tiny targets,
Which,
super tough ones to
and
begin.
those,
And
go ahead,
maybe
Morgan.
that's another thing. And this is going to start a whole another conversation maybe, but I do think that there's such a big pool on the east side of this country that maybe the average shooter might be a smidge better over there.
And that might be just statistically because of the volume of humans.
Yep. Oh
No,
yeah, I'm not saying that it's
that very well could be the case, as you're getting more better shooters, more of them because you've
it's
got
like
more people.
us Idaho shooters competing with Utah shooters. You got four times our entire state's population in one city. So, I mean, odds are you're gonna have a few more good shooters.
Yeah.
Yeah,
But
and the disparity of travel between matches on the West Coast, if you look at what we consider the East Coast, on how long does it take to get anywhere? If you have to drive 12 hours, you've gone through five, six states, seven states. If you have to drive 12 hours here, yeah, you made it to the other end of your own state. This is exciting. There's just not the population density doesn't allow for that concentration of them. We have a lot more venues to shoot, just not a lot of people to shoot them.
Yeah, no, I get that. I was just more of a, I don't know. I think that might be the case, but at the same time, that just because they might be better on average in their
Oh, I see what you mean. For their
location,
target
sizes and the things, but
and that
yeah,
might be
you're
why
comparing.
those
You're
are
also com
down.
Yeah, I get it. I should let you finish. You're comparing, well, the I don't know, the comment that people make that the East Coast matches are meatball matches compared to out here, and maybe it's not
Little
that.
bit.
Maybe the average shooter is better.
Well,
Yeah.
I think there's a it's a combo meal, right? Like, I think yes, they are easier. For sure, been there. They are still hard to win. Like,
Yeah.
every match, winning a match is definitely one of the most difficult things you're gonna do. It's not easy. Like, you got when you show up, especially out east, I mean, frick, you got 170, 200 guys you got to win. Good luck. Like, and
Yeah,
they're not
30
trying
of
to
those
give it
guys
to
are
you.
legitimate. Yeah.
At least 30 of
No,
them.
exactly.
No,
A
yeah.
minimum.
A
Yeah,
lot of
minimum.
times, 30 of them have won a match. And so, and like out here, you go to a match though, and you got 90 guys, and maybe two, three of them have won a match.
You get 10.
Sometimes, but
10 to
sometimes.
fit. Yeah, but that's huge difference if it's 40 guys have won a match, or to 10 guys.
Yeah, no,
Or five
I
guys, or
know, I
whatever,
know,
yeah.
I know.
Well, if you're looking at Parma last year, I think there was
There was a lot.
over 15 that had won a national level match.
Yes.
Yeah, most of the matches that I've run have been there have been at least 10 guys, if not 15 guys, who have won national level matches. So it's not super low, but what are you, 25% of the average one on the East Coast, or whatever that number is?
Yeah, it's definitely over there. It's just a little bit more. Well, it's not. There's nothing more or less about it. It's just different in the fact that like you're getting stressed differently. Like in the same like because well, first of all, you just go ahead and cross one of these stressors we talked about right off the list. Landmark. And target
Yeah.
acquisition, just cross it off. You
She's
don't have
well, yeah.
to do that.
And
And then
not everywhere. You and I.
you cross half of the word wind out. You only have wh. They don't have nd. They have wh.
Yeah.
Cuz
The end of it never showed up. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
no. He
It's
doesn't
just
finish his breath out there.
a different experience, right? You're right. It's
So
I've really only
thing.
been to one East Coast match. You know, I've shot in
And
Tennessee
okay,
down there.
that one was
And
not
you
a
and I
true
went there.
East Coast match.
That was a blast, man. That was a really fun
That was
match.
a tough match too.
Yeah, war rifles, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
But that was not a ch that to me feels more like a West Coast match. Did it not to you?
Okay. I don't know. I have K&M to compare it to, and Texas, and so yeah, it
K&M and
felt more
Texas
West
are
Coast.
more East Coast than that, I think.
Okay, I agree for sure.
War's one of the matches. It's like that guy does a really good job of like thinking it out and really stressing things, don't you think?
Yeah, 90-second 12-position stage. I'd say that's plenty of stress.
You better get burning.
Yo, man. And like I didn't
Or no,
finish.
was
I've
it?
never finished that stage, or a
All right.
stage like that, I should say.
That's a classic Paul Dallin example of chaos.
He loves those.
Yeah, but that's a test, right? Is you slow down and hit as many targets as you can legitimately hit, or do you burn and throw some extras?
I just know
No,
where my.
you finish the stage and get an 11, just like I
Yeah,
did.
you
No,
did,
exactly.
and I got a 10, and I knew I was gonna get a 10. I was like, I'm gonna
That's
go as
perfect.
fast as I can. And I went as fast as I could let myself go, which was just a good old 10 speed.
Yeah.
Those stages are an interesting stress. Those are kind of fun things to put in every now and again, but you got to balance the desire to abandon shots, which is a cool thing to test in a shooter.
I just have a tough
Or
time with that one.
I
I don't.
hate it.
I get it.
I hate it.
I hate that I do it, but I do it when I'm stressed on time.
I know, and I have like this tick where like I gotta go through all my stuff, and then it's like almost like I check myself. It's like, okay, am I ready to take
We're
the
not
shot
done.
now? Nope. Okay, boom. And then, and I do that every time. And then when I do that, I hit the target every time. Well, or pretty close. And so, I like to do it that way. And so when match director says, "Well, you got this much time," I kind of like look at it and say, "Well, most people aren't going to get that many of them anyway. So why not just get X amount and be happy with that? Because that's going to be more than almost everybody."
And hit the shots you take.
And then the one or two other people that get more than me in the entire match, cool. That's all right. I'll just go beat them on something else.
Yeah, you're not having to change how you shoot every stage, so
You don't have to relearn how to pull a trigger. Yeah, Brian. Brian and I were actually joking about this today and talking about sending rounds with a trigger pull. That's just not gone through the full checklist in time to go. It's just you're holding the wobble zone on the plate, and then you pull the trigger no matter where it's at when your breath hits a certain point.
Can you
A
do?
lot of times those hit.
I know. I've thought about
It's
this.
super interesting on that thing. Same thing of because we're talking about holding breath versus like if you're breathing out and right at the right point in your cycle, you're trying to get that thing to swing at the right time. But if you just torch that thing off with your wobble zone in the right spot,
That's natural point of aim.
if your natural
Yeah.
point of aim is in the right spot,
Natural point of
it
aim
I
hits
guess.
more targets than anything else.
I think confidence also plays a huge role in that. And I don't know how to describe that,
Natural point of aim.
but yeah.
I think it's not just that though. I think it's a huge portion of your brain operating system. It's so tied up. If you're not confident in those shots, you've got this voice in the back of your head screaming at you like, "This isn't gonna work. You're never gonna do that thing." So you're trying to be
Don't
like,
miss.
I
Don't
guess
miss.
a little
Don't
part
miss.
of that is something in you relaxes,
Yeah.
and then
Yeah.
like
Yeah,
you
I
know,
like
and
that.
your wobble kind of drifts up because your body relaxes. I don't know if this makes any sense to you, but I've seen this before.
Absolutely.
It'll kind of
Yep.
drift up and away from you. So for me, it'll drift up and left. For you guys, it drift up and right. And that's where they go too. Because you're
Yeah.
like, ah, am I gonna hit it? Am I gonna hit it? And you take a little bit longer, and then you boom, and your natural point of aim just drifts up and a little left on that plate, and you didn't know it because you're like, you're trying to really do that, and then you might even try to muscle it back.
I think it's a tension in your shoulder, maybe. Because I see it with larger rounds. When you really start to light up on those things, they can drive up and away.
Maybe.
Have
I
you
mean,
seen like
well,
have
yeah,
you
and
ever laid down and played with the the recoil control in your, like in your shoulder, and like the way it pushes through you with a heavy recoiling rifle. I would assume you've shot this way, to where you go and you test your, just shoot groups somewhere, whatever distance, and then watch your tension in that shoulder on how it's pushing you and how you're mounted to your interface. And if you really start to tense up on that thing just goes up and away. Same group, same exact group. It just gets farther away from where you were trying to hit. That's a very, I saw with 7mm quite a bit shooting, watching, because I was trying to figure out what's the space. This was a time
up when and I was away, really
burning on trying to see if you're supposed to, like the free recoil concept, if it tracked for what
it
I
goes,
like or what
it goes up and right with me. It goes laterally, more laterally.
The free recoil does?
No, not mine free recoil. Goes,
but with tension, tension, yours goes lateral because of that,
yes.
Because of the recoil angle, because of how it's. It's got to be the way you put it in your pocket, the pocket of your, or on your shoulder.
It bounces down your collarbone.
Yes, sir. Yeah, no, and the angle. So the angle comes away. The barrel.
That's why I
sure.
actually, when I get canted or anything, I move the butt of my rifle lateral.
Gotcha.
You guys see the Brian Litz's video when he shows a muzzle super slow mo, and he's talking about. Does your muzzle jump before the bullet
100%
exits the rifle?
I mean, it just makes sense.
Yeah, and he shows he proves that it actually does. So let's put pressure on that rifle, and isn't that going to magnify that whip or that muzzle lift?
The angle, for sure. If you whatever your pressure is, it's going to.
Which, and I don't think he's talking about whipping that. I think he's just saying like it continues to move, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it starts to move before the bullet exits.
Before
so
the
that
bullet
changes,
engine.
That obviously is going to change your point of impact.
And that's
correct?
Why, for sure, like, in you want to have something on it, and you want to follow through, like you want your mm-hmm. body to follow through. The only thing, I guess, in my mind, I'm thinking is I don't want to have too much pushed into it, because the other thing is when when your gun starts to move, like for some reason, like that vibration. Will usually the especially on, I think it might happen on sand worse than other things. And the reason is because sand will lock up until there's any movement, and then it'll break loose quickly. If that makes, I don't know if this makes any sense. This is my theory on this, why I get a bunch of lateral movement. So bear with me here, but so if I load into it pretty good and just take a shot, it'll break right hard right on me. And usually instead of my recoil going up, it'll just go almost straight right, mm-hmm. like a couple mils.
I guess my theory would be that it does, because it's going to go
point.
Somewhere. It's going to go somewhere. You put more resistance on backward motion. That motion is going to go somewhere else. So it's going to go lateral, vertical.
Well, and if you think about it, all my mass is on the right side of my gun, right? So my butt of my rifle, and if I'm leaning forward into it, my rifle is going to just move to the left out of my body's way.
It is, mm-hmm. yeah, for sure. That's
and so it just moves out of there, and that's just what
that's also
the, happens.
The critical part of managing recoil is being perpendicular to the bore of your rifle to try to allow.
But it doesn't
as
matter,
mass.
I don't think.
I think it matters if you how you absorb that energy into your body in order to let the rifle be consistent.
But if you're loading it too much, I'm sorry. Like, I don't care what anybody says. Give me the Marine handbook and beat it
over
my head.
No, 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 you're right. No, no, no,
but
no, that's not. I'm
it's
not,
just pure
yeah.
physics. If you've got.
No, I'm not trying. Yes.
I'm saying if you have a 165-pound Morgan leaning into a gun, which is not very much compared to, like, a lot of guns, but say you're leaning straight forward into it, that doesn't have enough to, like, move me backwards much, but it still wants to go somewhere. And say I'm perfectly perpendicular, it's still I have most of my weight on the outside of the gun. Like, I might have 30%.
No, right, exactly. You're not pushing a dead center of Morgan.
Yeah, if I could put it right in the middle of me, then it can't go lateral. But since I got to look through it with one eye,
So I was doing some testing on this too. So another, this is my theory again. Another pitfall of putting too much loading a rifle too much is what it does to my vision. Like if I'm perfectly square behind the rifle, I'm doing everything I can. I'm loading it. I'm trying to stop that rifle. I lose focus of the target. It takes me longer to recover and see where my bullet goes. And maybe that makes
You want me
perfect
to tell
sense.
you my
Maybe
theory?
it seems trivial, but that's I've really put some time into testing that.
You want me to tell you my theory on that one? Maybe I have
Yeah.
told you. I think I
Maybe. Go ahead.
probably have. But well, because in that case, when you overload a rifle, your reticle has to move up and then it moves right back down and then it stops. If that makes any sense. So, 'cause your recoil is all your reticle is always going to move up and your gun's going to stop somewhere up there and then it's going to come back down. Well, in my opinion, you want to just catch the rifle so it just boom comes back, stops. And so the reticle should just have to move up. But a lot of people are always trying to push it back to the middle. And if you're loading it, it like almost does this bounce where it goes up, down, and then you have to re-find wherever the heck the target ended up in that whole deal. Because
You're
you
re
can't
yeah,
even track it.
it definitely jumps
Yeah.
substantially more when you try to load it.
Whereas when you catch it, it's like I can almost track. So if I because it almost feels slower, I kind of in there, boom, pull a trigger, and I can track where the target goes in my reticle, and I don't really lose it. And then it stops, and maybe say I'm 5 mils up in the reticle, I don't really care. I can still see the target. I just let it stop up there, and
Yeah.
it. I don't. I'm not trying to put. A lot of people are always trying to push it back to the middle. Because I don't know, it's like a comfort thing. They got to get it back to the middle. So then they move twice as much that, it like quickly ends up at 5 mils and then they're like, and then they're moving it back, and.
I developed a terrible, terrible habit using a specific reticle that it looks like a screen door below your center point. I don't know how much we want to talk about that, where I would force my rifle down
Yeah.
after every shot in order to
That's
see where
exactly
they're
what I'm
hitting.
talking about.
Because I couldn't see through the reticle. Because I couldn't see like that. Yeah, I'm like, wait
But
a
you probably
minute.
couldn't see anything inside of almost 500 yards.
No, I couldn't see anything in there. I'm like, there's nothing. Like, what the hell, man? So I'm like jacking my rifle up when I shoot. I'm sure, no, yeah, that dramatically caused issues with recoil and or inner, like the bullet placement,
But
right?
what's funny is when you get rid of all that and just catch the rifle, all of a sudden you can start see bullets at 200 yards.
Yeah. Yeah.
You may be looking, 2 mils below your crosshairs to see it, but
Who cares?
doesn't matter.
For me, I can stay focused on the target. It doesn't really matter what the reticle does if I'm not taking all that energy so abruptly.
It doesn't go black
Which in
either.
I think you're right, probably taking the energy abruptly, but for me, what happens is I lose the entire wherever the heck the because it is a jolt, it whether it's jolting my eye, whatever it's doing, it's just my focus for whatever reason, I go from being able to see where the target is to all of a sudden I lose the target everywhere in my scope and I'm like, dang, where to go? And then I have to re-find the target, and then I find it, and then I can see where it goes, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, super fast, super fun.
And that all happens in under a second. So then,
Yeah,
yeah.
your whole travel time to try to focus on all the things and then record the data so that you can apply it to all the rest of your targets.
So that's
Yay!
fun.
No, super nerd. It's fun.
But that's why we like it. But anyways, so anything else you guys want to put out there about the old Snake River, whatever it is? I forget the
The Snake
name.
River
Standoff.
outdoorsman. Oh, standoff. Sorry, which one?
It's Standoff. I don't know. See, that's why I didn't guess.
Dude, you try to name all the matches.
Oh,
It's a
that's
pain.
exactly.
Oh, yeah. You said Snake River Outdoorsman because that is
Yeah.
another match. And yes.
It's the
Yeah.
Standoff, though.
We have two matches. So the hunter match and the PRS match. The standoff is the PRS match. The outdoorsman is our hunter match, our NRL hunter match. So they're what, 2 months apart? We have the
Yeah.
March 3rd, 4th, 5th is the PRS match, and we're basing them all out of Mountain Home, Idaho. We're gonna shoot the PRS match in a canyon. It's actually closer to Bliss, and then we'll be back to, I think it's 21, 22, 23 of April. We're gonna be in outside of Mountain Home again, to in between Boise and Mount Hope, up in the foothills. We have
But
a dinner.
north of the freeway, yeah.
Yeah, north of the freeway, NRL Hunter match out
Which
in.
I've got some really good pictures I'll post for that. So I'm
Yeah,
pretty excited
both.
about that match too.
It's super fun, right? Like the tough part about shooting things is you want to shoot more things. Even after you are like, oh, cool, these are great. Let's go make more things.
So
But
yeah, I don't know. Is there anything the people need to do anything as far as signing up? Go to just the PRS website or
yeah,
practice score?
there's a link at the PRS website. You can find it on our Snicker Outdoorsman practice score
Yeah, both matches and
club.
ROs for
Yep,
we don't have
and we
ROs
need
open yet. Yeah, we got open for the other one, but yes.
right,
Perfect.
and
Yeah.
then of course on the F-book too.
Oh yeah, Facebook.
Yep,
Yeah, Brian loves if you
loving
just contact
Facebook.
him, if you'll contact him directly with any
Contact him on
personal
Facebook because yeah, that's the way
requests.
he's gonna get back to you really fast.
I
Speedily.
do try. I really do try.
I find him in a corner of some establishment at some point and have an extended conversation. He would appreciate that very much.
So, right on. Well, thanks for coming on. I feel like we rambled quite a bit, but got something done, so that's good.
Hopefully we added a little bit.
No, I think it was good. So,
If you'd like more tangents, we have time.
oh man, I tangents are like my favorite thing ever. So I'm all in. It's just how many tangents do you want to go down? I'll just keep going.
That's a real issue. Yeah, it's a real issue. Another time, maybe we do that, and then you have more content.
Yeah, no. So, anyways, thanks for coming
Thank you.
on, and I'm excited for
Yeah, thanks
y'all's
for having
match.
us.
Oh yeah, thank you for doing this, Morgan. It's pretty cool. This podcast is pretty sweet that you're putting this together, trying to maintain that space. It's cool to have all of these theories. All of us chase down these dragons on our own for so long in these individual little spaces. Expanding that out and bringing in the variety of humans is a cool way to expand the thought and make us all try to get better at what we're doing.
And nobody really has, ch I don't feel like nobody has really chased those dragons in public before.
I
Yeah, I don't know.
agree.
Yeah, I don't know that I've heard them either.
You know
Yeah, he,
what I mean?
yeah, you don't have. Yeah, it's tough to like you, tough to get the access to enough humans with different interaction with the same concepts that are high functioning individuals that are putting together theories on how these little details are all stacking into the same space is a super cool thing to do because it helps all of us. To be like, well, maybe I didn't think of it that way, or why did I think of it this way? You know, the same analytical analyze everything, and it's cool that you're doing it. Thank you for bringing this on, man.
Yeah, no problem. You two are pretty good at overthinking things as well. So I
Yeah,
appreciate
we
you
had
coming
that
on.
conversation today, didn't we, Seth?
Yeah, I don't overthink anything. Hey, Brian, that's Brian's job.
I'm really good at overthinking stuff, so
I'm
yeah, but
only
you're a
impulsive.
simplificator, you know
Uh,
That's a
it,
word.
it's it, is it?
Simplificator.
Simplificator.
That's
All
good.
right.
That's a sweet word.
It's not a real
If you
one.
don't, if you don't think about outcomes, like what are you thinking about?
That seems like another tangent.
There you go, right there, ladies and gentlemen. You have the question of the day. If you don't think about outcomes, what are you thinking about? Out of the words, out of the mouth of Seth Gardner himself.
Real cool. Real
Okay.
cool.
Well,
All right. Thanks,
thanks for
Morgan.
living in, or not living. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later.